Okay, I'll briefly present myself. My name is Silke. I'm from Berlin, and I'm working on power relations in Linux user groups and at events community events and rituals that take part. Normally, I'm a political scientist, but this work is going to be quite sociological. My talk is titled Peer Reproduction, Key Signing Parties Between Trust and Subtle Othering. And I first give you a short introduction to key signing parties and how I got to do a research on them. In the second part, I'll share some of my observations with you, and then we'll see what this means for the community. And it's my interpretation, of course, and the observations are based on a few key signing parties I observed in Germany. That was my outline. Are you familiar with key signing parties? Okay, so I take them as a ritual that takes part at congresses or bigger meetings of the free software community. It belongs to encrypted electronic communication. And I take them here as an example to show certain relations that establish between people, between participants. And I'll shortly summarize what happens at such a party. This is a GPG key in its text form. People generate a pair of keys, a public and a private key. They publish their public keys on the internet or send them to their communication partners via email. The public key is used by others to encrypt an email to the owner of this key, and only this particular person should be able to decrypt the message. Key signing parties are arranged to assure that public keys really belong to the person that allegedly published it. The authenticity of a key is certified by the digital signatures of those who have checked the true identity of the owner. Here you see an example, that's my key, and you can see on the internet who signed it. That's a part of them, with the date, when we met, what the people are called, and what are their email addresses. All this is public knowledge. The idea behind this is that not everyone is able to check every identity personally, because people live very far away from each other. But if one can rely on signatures which others have given to a key, one can assume that the key is authentic. This notion is called web of trust. Here you see a schema of a web of trust after a party, a signing party, and it was published by the organizer. He drew such a web before the party, and then he drew up which interlinkages there are afterwards, so it gets closer. And for example, the person A has signed keys with B and C at such a party, but B and C haven't met, so they could trust each other's keys in this idea, because there is the linkage, A's digital signature on both their keys. Big signing parties with many participants make this web of trust grow very fast. One could say that the web of trust is a network of individuals who want to be sure about the true identity of their communication partners. So, what did I observe? It's important to me to draw your attention to the interaction between the participants during key signing. I observed a few parties in Germany with about, the smallest one had maybe 20 participants and the biggest one 100. And I found that the bulk of communication is about basic differences between the participants. And here I'd like to discuss with you to which extent the ritual is influenced by categories like nationality and what this means for a community that wants to be international. During the first part of a key signing party, the attendance list is checked. All those present, who you see there's a list and every key is listed on it. And on the top you see checkboxes, and the people who have met can check if the other person has confirmed the fingerprint and if you have seen the ID card. Yeah. And so they check the attendance to know if all the people are present who applied for the event, and if everyone can confirm that his or her fingerprint of the keys is authentically reproduced on the list. At international key signing parties, I observed several times that during the welcome or the check of attendance, single persons piped up and said they did not understand German. They asked if it was possible to continue in English or to translate. So by defining German as the lingua franca on international community meetings in Germany, some people unintentionally make an issue out of their different background by asking for translation. And generally it's no problem for anyone to switch to a different language, namely English, but evidently nobody came to think of it before. So this behavior produces a rule in common practice. Participants speak German. That's the passport control. So on the one side of the queue, all those line up who show their passports, and the second row checks, okay, 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 and afterwards they change their roles.
So everybody wears a mask?
What?
Yeah, you're wearing masks? You just blank them out?
I blank them out, yes. this passport control has, for me, it has the main message that the only certificate that proves one's identity is issued by a State Department. In Germany, this can be a passport or an identity card. Remarkably, no driving licenses are accepted. At key signing parties, the passport becomes the center of attention. This is what an ID card in Germany looks like. And the passport contains information that is picked up by the participants to start brief, small talk-like conversations. Passports thus offer the possibility to talk about where people come from, about their appearance via the photo, about the age and gender. I go a bit into detail. The first observation I made is that dialect is perceived as a deviance. So on the one hand, foreign languages were an issue at key signing parties, but I also observed that dialects or languages as Swiss German constantly were a topic of conversation. Say a sentence in Swabian to prove where you come from. And remarks like this are meant to be jokes, but my point is to say that also by jokes, the construction of otherness is perpetuated, or worse, of inequality. Then names can be, or can become, or be made carriers of exoticism. I frequently observe that special attention is paid to the participants' names. Questions like, where does that name come from? How do you pronounce that? Are very common. The same people with uncommon names were asked again and again during a key signing party. Their interaction partners tried to pronounce their names and made comments like, oh, cool. Surely this is meant to be friendly. One wants to demonstrate to be interested in the partner. But I argue that this has an effect. It gives an exotic distinction to people who bear uncommon names. There is no personal exchange with anybody during a key signing party, but the interaction is restricted to noticing exotic names and mainly finding them cool. At the same time, making someone appear exotic confirms a norm again. The non-exotic, commonly known names correspond to the norm. And scenes like this make me think of situations in which, for example, people wearing a veil are told that their German is so good, although there's no reason it should not be. The next point is the authenticity and validity of passports. What is recognized as a valid identification paper? In Germany, official identification papers are passports and ID cards, but elsewhere this is different. And not only did I observe that participants utter doubts in the authenticity of non-German identification papers, very often this is announced as jokes too. Oh, self-made in color printer. But I also saw in some cases people refused to sign a key of someone who brought, for example, a Swiss driving license, which for him or her is a valid document. And at that point, individuals can decide to produce others as untrustworthy persons or not. So I think one can here talk of a lack of cross-cultural competence. The norm is given by the majority of the attendants. It seems to be difficult to put oneself in the position of somebody else who knows different norms, or to accept the papers they bring as equivalents of the own. And what also often happens is that participants have expired passports, which confronts the crowd with a problem. Shall they obey to the strict rules of key signing and refuse their trust? Or shall they turn a blind eye to the rules? In my opinion, such moments of irritation show paradoxes in the ritual. They raise the question, what is a trustworthy communication partner? An honest and law-abiding citizen who at once exchanges expired papers? Gender. We have heard a lot about the community being male-dominated. And not surprisingly, there are very few women present at key signing parties, as in most parts of the community. And during the key signing parties I saw, I had the general impression that where people come from is made more important than gender. I just observed a few situations in which gender gets a subtle meaning. One example was during this check of attendance. Everyone is taking notes on the attendance list to fill in who is there. And the heads are turned down towards the list all the time while the names are called. The moment a female name is called, all heads turn up to look at her. A second example were comments during the check of identity. When someone calls out very loudly, "Ah, you always stick longer to talk to women." And my last point is knowledge, which is a prerequisite. At big key signing parties, all knowledge about key signing is required. No explanations are provided in the course of it. There is no room for questions. The attendants do not challenge the idea of building a web of trust, let alone ask how email encryption works or key generation. So you have to learn it by yourself or elsewhere or whatever, but not at the key signing party. So so-called newbies at the big events stood in the way. They did not understand which principle the crowd followed lining up in a queue. And here I saw an exception. It was a smaller key signing party with 20 persons. The organizers provided quite a lot of information during the ritual, how it is carried out, etc. They even reserved a whole hour before the event for answering questions. However, I didn't see many persons who asked for any introduction. So key signing mainly is a ritual for experts. There's even a ranking list of experts on the internet. The 1,000 keys that are best interlinked with other keys are listed, and you can get a new list every 2 weeks. Someone is calculating it regularly. And you'll see the rank on the right side, where the person is among the top, I don't know how many. There are lists with 1,000 or 5,000 keys. And during the parties, some participants kept joking about their high position in concurrence to others, while the beginners did not know what they were talking about. So what can I draw from this? I see when I observe such a ritual, I see key signing as a practice of othering. And at first I see also a paradox in key signing, that on the one hand, the community criticizes the establishment of a surveillance society. Amongst others, encrypted communication is important to them to protect their privacy from the authorities. One might say that key signing is a public demonstration of people who want to stress their consciousness of data being sensitive. But then why do they put the web of trust online, where everyone can reconstruct the social networks, who met whom, at which key signing party, when, on which date, so you can reconstruct whole social networks by this. And I think, for example, yeah, I think people that really have, who really have an interest in encryption have no interest in their networks being reconstructed publicly on the internet. On the other hand, the state is handing out the only accepted proof of identity, namely the passports. And I assume that the relevance of these papers in the ritual is one reason for nationality, language, and provenance being made important, apart from the fact that we learn to think in those categories and have them quite incorporated. But yeah, this raises the question, what other ways can we think to build up trust in the internet if it's not an ID card that you show during a personal meeting? And why should we give someone trust because he has got an ID card? I mean, what does it mean? So we have seen that the discursive production of otherness is a constitutive part of key signing. And I would say that two sorts of others are produced in the ritual. First, there are persons who are not trustworthy because they do not have valid or accepted papers, but who take part in the party. Their disobedience to the rules of key signing makes them suspicious. In this logic, only citizens are trustworthy. I have to drink. So only citizens are trustworthy in this logic. The identification with one or more nationalities are crucial to be taken as an equivalent partner. The second sort of others are people whom can be trusted by signing their keys because they do have valid papers, but whose otherness has to be mentioned over and over again. They deviate from the average participant because of their background or body, because they have uncommon names or speak in a different way. Every mentioning updates the inscription as other and helps establishing a norm. Thereby, nationality becomes one fundamental category that structures the practice of key signing. Quite a few of my observations allow conclusions as to a lack of cross-cultural competence. So it remains to consider the question what the norm is. And I mean, I talk about these cases I saw, and here the huge majority was sort of incorporating the norm of attendance, was of German nationality, German speaking, of German offspring, male, and specialists in key signing rather than newbies. And of course, my image is not completely homogeneous. I have to mention other topics of small talk, like, for example, the community projects the participants are active in. The list of attendance can give clues as to these projects via the email addresses, so this too is a topic of small talk, but it kind of, I don't know, I had the impression it's not as important as talking about the things I mentioned before. Jokes about new ID cards containing biometric data are quite common too. This can be understood as political criticism in a context where people nevertheless rely on those ID cards as identification papers. And finally, I also have to mention little conversations alongside the event where questions concerning the ritual were answered somehow inofficially, that when it's not explained to everyone how you have to queue up in the room, people ask and someone will answer it, but yeah, it's not generally explained to everybody. So what's the point of this talk? Such processes of othering I described have effects on the community. Drawing on basic distinctions between people makes it easy to open up classifications based on upon certain characteristics. My observations make me pay special attention because the same processes basically underlie discrimination. In this context, it is very hard to distinguish between friendly jokes towards the guests of the event and the subtle drawing on discriminating patterns that are deeply embedded in mainstream society. Such cognitive patterns are very long-lasting, often structured in a dichotomous way, and they are often evoked unconsciously. They are based upon the premise that people and societies differ from each other in significant ways. This can be the base for racism, sexism, classism, homophobia, and all sorts of discrimination. So, the outstanding issues are which social power relations are reproduced in practices of the FLOSS community? How is this related to the community's claim to work in a different way? Because I think in many points this is contradictory. And what can be done to raise people's awareness of potentially discriminating behavior, especially when they just wanted to be friendly or funny without accusing them of discrimination? Thanks for your attention. Yeah, my moderation is not there.
Yeah. I was wondering, given the problems with using government ID, do you have sort of alternative suggestions for that? What are the ways you could prove someone's identity?
I think if people want to trust each other, they have to get to know each other. So, I mean, such a web of trust would be smaller, but if the people in a project who work together for a while, I mean, they could just sign their keys without showing any official thing. Yes. Mathieu?
Yeah, I thought that was really, really, really interesting. I've got about six questions. So
okay.
Just what you just said, Lucy just said is, I guess, is there the possibility that somebody might impersonate somebody and that you have to see who they were, like on the card, to make sure it's the person who claims that they are that person or in fact that person?
I didn't get to a point.
The reason why you need to have an identity document, is it because there's a risk that there might be a fake person who comes along and says, I'm this person, is that a concern at all for people?
Yeah, in interviews they said so.
Okay, so maybe.
But on the other hand, when I asked if anyone ever had the problem that someone tried to intercept communication between others with a fake key, it never happened to anybody.
I was interested in the regional thing you mentioned, because I can understand how there would be domination of women or of minorities, but when you said that there was a lot of comments about where people were coming from in terms of the region, I mean, is there a domination effect about which, like, are the Bavarians oppressing the other region, or is it, I didn't get that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not completely sure about this, but I think the norm is speaking without the dialect.
Okay, so, like...
So, if, I mean, if you can say a sentence in Swiss German, and then people will believe you, okay, this must be your true identity card, and this is you, authentically you.
Because the identity card mentions region, is that why?
Yeah, it worked like this. You see, aha, someone is born in Stuttgart, talk Swahili, please.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a native verification system.
Yeah, it's spontaneously this happens. Yeah,
it's as possible because their origin is Manchester and they speak with a pronounced Welsh accent. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they might have moved to Wales when they were six. You know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a system for that people. The most important,
Oh, so there is a rank, that's what I'm trying to get at, because if it's just the verification of your origin, that's okay. I suppose, although it might be offensive. But is there an ordering? Is there another ring? Is there a rank?
The first time I heard of key signing parties was when two men who I know very well and have known for 2 years, we exchanged keys because we began discussing something that we felt we need to exchange keys for. So I've marked both of their keys as trusted. Because I had emails in the course of a discussion we were having. So, okay, someone might have been intercepting everything and put in the back. Yeah, you know. So I just marked them trusted and carried on. And then the both of them emailed and said, oh, we should have a key signing party. I'm like, okay, what's that? So I went and checked it up. And why do we need a ritual? I've known these guys for years. It reminded me of some research I did earlier into the formation of professional hierarchies. And this is what it seemed to me, exactly the pattern of a formation of an exclusory professional hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The point at which you move from pastoral passing of knowledge to mm-hmm. acolytes to a closed system.
I think what I did only two interviews with people who organized key signing parties so far, and after what I said, I think for them it's very important to do key signing in public, and it's a public demonstration. I take it seriously. I'm not part of the unaware masses who throw data into the internet without caring. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know many men who insist that they'll encrypt a message which just says "See you Friday."
Well, you only encrypt messages that are like sensitive, then it sort of pinpoints which ones.
Well, yes,
yeah. I've had people send me dozens of encrypted messages and then send one which is encrypted, and yeah, it's something fairly trivial.
In other words, its meaning is clearly located outside of its purported meaning, the meaning which is communicated verbally. It's clearly not actually the important visceral
mm-hmm.
meanings of the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people that really need to use encryption, public and private keys, interchange key and maintain it privately. Well, I have some people who have keys that have in a single room and in a special place.
Mm-hmm.
Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask one question?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the ranking that there might be, I mean, I remember reading an article about Debian that said key signing parties were a way for people to get power because they got to meet lots of people and they got to have connection with lots of people. And the more partners on your keys you had, the more rank you had,
yeah.
That sort of thing. And then they actually argued that it had an impact on the actual governance of Debian. I didn't really agree with that, but in any case, somebody who was managing that process, the new members or whatever, I can't remember the quality, but became project leader a couple of years ago. So
mm-hmm.
it seemed to be used as a parallel system. There's competence as a programmer or
mm-hmm.
you bring to the project, and then there's key signing, connect, social networking.
Who knows you?
Which is
standard professional hierarchization
yeah.
methodology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
so it became sort of, yeah.
There's also sort of the technological knowledge that it kind of shows off. You're more of a geek if you know how to do key signing, how to go to key signing parties.
I'm just talking about within the project, there were people who had a lot more connections, who were just as good programmers as other programmers, and they seem to gain something from that activity, which is in itself not productive activity. It's just
It seems a bit like the old fashioned model of going to the same golf club with the guy who's the
boss. Masonic.
And getting a high job because you play golf with the guy or something.
Secret key.
Where can I find something about this?
I'll give you the reference. All Deviant galleries do similar parts.
What?
All Deviant galleries of people do similar parts.
Yes.
So is there a special significance to the use of the term ritual? Because you used it a lot. You talked about progression. Is that anthropological stuff? Progression for different kinds of organizations?
It was really a long time. I can't remember what I was researching it for. But
from the pastoral society to...
It's anthropological. You have a format where you take in a child at the age of 4 or 5 or 7 or something, you know, give him a boy before the age of 7, blah, blah, and the boy assists and, you know, gradually assimilates knowledge and moves up through gradations of something like a priesthood or something like that. In China, at a certain point, you see the nascence of a new system where something like professional guilds begin to form, and China was the first place to have examinations as the entry. And you see this happen in an imperial structure because the need for bureaucracy exceeds what this pastoral system can provide. You see it in the British Empire, you see it in the Chinese Empire, you see it in all kinds of imperial systems. You'll begin to get entrance exams to a privileged bureaucracy, and that will be organised in an incredibly ritualistic, hierarchical way, because what they're doing is extending privilege. And this becomes a site of extreme anxiety because privilege is by nature closed. So when you need to expand those boundaries to draw more people into a privileged elite, that boundary becomes a site of anxiety, so you will heavily ritualise it in order to maintain the exclusory power.
So do you have an anthropological framework, or is it just something that
My work is going to be an ethnography, so it's
political scientists.
Yes.
these emerging. I was doing a similar kind of cross.
Yeah, it does sound very Masonic, as you said. It's that kind of, you've got to be recommended by somebody who's already trusted by the group.
Yeah,
and then you're assessed by the group as to whether you can enter or not, and how high your number is, you know.
And I think to be undue importance given to name as the government authorities recognise the person, not to their position within the community.
Yeah.
What we really need to do is this person the author of Lions, not is it that person that the government says is Lions to
No. The other thing is you can fake ID as well. No, I could come to a signing party with a fake passport.
Exactly.
So if someone just accepts that as blind or true.
Perform and change my name.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's actually an issue, is that, for example, some people, classes of people have a lot of problems with documents, like undocumented workers, for example. Like,
yeah.
And also transgender people would be largely excluded from those parties as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, those who have no papers at all, it's not very probable that they will show up inside the community at such an event. But
these are some of the people who are most need of, who are most vulnerable to the political activism on the part of, like, undocumented workers.
So
it's very likely to be disrupted by the state.
So, but what you're saying, see, because I think that one of the reasons people use government IDs is because it's a recognised standard that everybody understands and can see. And I agree that it might not be perfect, but the alternative would be that each community has to make up their own system to base identity on. I mean, it could just be, you know, varying levels of friendship, I don't know. But it seems more fuzzy. Whereas here it's clear, and it's true that you can fake things and stuff, but it does offer a consistent basis for you.
I mean, I raise the objection because actually I personally would be excluded from a key signing party because of the nature of some of the issues that are wrong with my documents. Like, I'm a transgender person that's got my old name and gender on that. So I'm nodding myself right here, but I don't want to go to a party full of people I've never met and have everyone comment on my passport.
It's interesting because I actually work on the issues of visual identity and my, it's just a really important issue. I mean, apart from your case, which in fact reinforces the need, but it should be up to the community to come up with a system, like a consistent system, and that's an alternative to government documents, which are not, which don't work in some cases, or, you don't think that there's any need for the basis.
The content is not only that system, but the contents. If you look to a people, you look who signed, oh, this is an important guy, this is Luis Gordo. This is that. Look, that's the important stuff.
For trust, I would say to establish trust, there is no general reliable base.
No, it's not general. It's highly bureaucratic and hierarchical.
Yeah.
You must know the people that is there. Passports don't mean anything. That kind of ceremony are not the important part of all the system. The important part is you know really who is in there.
See, what I'd like to say, just excuse me, Lorraine, that I'm just really interested in this, is if you think about just the community of hackers, okay, it's limited, but if you think about the move towards digital life, where the whole population is going to be aligning using more and more, you need a basis for identity alone, because the reason there's some control is because some people could have it. Capability to damage systems or to vandalize. So, I don't know, just could it be generalized to a bigger population, this sort of system?
In fact, you can see.
I think we would want to.
I'm really tired.
I really don't.
How much?
I have already concerns about the linkage of different environments in which I have a presence online. And I certainly do not want a single key that makes a link.
How much else was going on at these events, or was it just go out, sorting?
You said there were no other social activities. That's another interesting.
Because, I mean, if it was used as an excuse to get a community of people who were interested in vaguely the same kind of things together, I can kind of see why it's still going on. But the way you've described it, it's like the actual original point of it, it's not even particularly fulfilling that function because it's only a really narrow kind of definition of identity.
Yes. Those key signing parties were in the context of a sort of conference.
Okay.
Yeah. So there were lectures and Linux night with lots of
hacking.
There was something around, but the key signing party took an hour. You checked, okay, and you walk out.
It's certainly quite famous because I went to key signing parties quite a long time since. It was very much separate to the conference. You went in a separate room. You didn't really speak to anyone. Ask their name
and their identity
cards and then
move on to the next
person. There's kind of no social interactions.
That's strange, because when I've seen it, it's been at like Linux user group meetings or logs and things, and people don't all just line up and like walk along. You'll just be sat somewhere around the table talking, and then someone will say, while you're talking about something else, we'll just get on with this.
Is that because you're sensible? It seems
sensible when you do it, yeah.
So did you know
those
people?
Yeah.
So did you know people in advance?
I knew them, but not well enough to say. I'd only met them once or twice. I couldn't say definitively who they were.
Yeah,
you can even say as a nickname. You don't need to put your real name.
Yeah, that's right.
If it was in a conference, I believe you that you will say. I'm not engaged in any kind of activity where it's really likely that I need to be suspicious that one of you is a government agent masquerading as an ethnographist. I mean, I just take your word
for it.
I'm not sure that the government knows who really is. Exactly. This is kind of my feeling. So, in no other area of my life would I disbelieve you when you tell me that your name is Lucy and you work at the medical
In many ways, it's about speed, though, isn't it? I mean, of course, it's better if we get to know each other and spend whatever days, weeks, months getting to know who each other are. But if you go to something like an airport, you've got to present a passport because you can't stand there getting to know the security guard until he agrees that you're who you say you are. And then, exactly, you've got to give him something instantly that he can look at and go, okay, yeah, you can come through.
But why should there be a security guard at the airport?
Well, well, true, but you know, that's the sort of thing. It's about speed, I think, more than.
Yeah, but
if
we're talking about, the point of these key parties, as I understand it, is to expand this web of trust in a way that seems quite worrying to me, and I don't really get, but actually, you know, it would seem to be much more sensible that if you wanted to do this kind of thing, that you would do it at this kind of event where you already have a professional trust in the people.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never met any of you before, but I see no reason to imagine you've been lying to me about who you are. You obviously know other people who, you know.
Well, in a sense, established a word of trust by mentioning that you know somebody. It's not, hasn't been verified, I suppose.
Yeah, but in no other area of my life would I expect it to be verified, so unless I'm like spying in,
The reason I thought people were using it is because it's a security problem, but it seems like you're just using it just as a sort of almost networking tool, something like that.
Yeah,
a coolness thing. You know? So in that case, it does become slightly ridiculous. But if it's giving access to resources, like if you can program or change the system, then you do need to make sure that nobody's going to come in and manage the system.
That's both.
And that's the case for governments, and that's why they're looking at digital identity as well, because they want to make this more and more services are going to come in the ritual are going to be available online, and so they don't want anyone. I mean, they want to link the entity, the digital entity, to the person, and physical.
Isn't that the point of things like open ID? When you said that you wouldn't want just one thing, that's the whole point of open ID, is you have just one.
Yeah, that's open ID, which gives me a reasonable trust in open ID to go and assist whoever.
Yeah.
And you could have multiple open ID.
Yeah, that's true.
So I often have the problem that people ask me, how is it going? What are your results? And I never know how to explain them. About key signing, I would say it's attached to nationality.
Well, but isn't the German webosphere or stuff really insular because of the language thing? I mean, I've done some research on political parties, and there were just hardly any linkages between environmental groups in the English world or in Germany. They seem really is that something that you think isolates them with the language? They don't want to speak English language.
No, I think that it's no problem. They are. Yeah. They have contact to people everywhere.
Okay.
They speak different languages, and I just when I analyze the ritual, I see everything turns around the passport and what is on it. Not everything, but most of communication is about those stupid details on this paper.
Do you really don't like the passports?
do you think there's any, because Germany historically, certainly in the 1980s, had a much more active police department than many other European countries, and hosted the Interpol computer, and was generally, all the Germans I knew in the 1980s, I haven't been there for a long time, when I was in there in the 1980s, Germans were most anxious about security and about very anxious about security in comparison with British activists. Do you think this is too much?
I don't know anything about the 80s.
I get the impression now when I speak to, but of course obviously most of the German women I know are my age, but they're still in Germany and they are still 5 billion times more concerned about security and state surveillance and so forth than British people are.
Who's out of Germany? It's the West
Germany. Well, I've been to East Germany when the war was up, but mostly Kreuzberg.
No,
yeah, but now it's an important topic among activists because of this data retention policy repressions around the G8 meeting. and yeah, I don't know, video surveillance of public space and all this is quite a bit.
We are the worst country in Europe for this, but we are the least worried.
Surveillance, yeah.
You know, there's something cultural. I don't know if it's historical or cultural.
Yeah, you say it's the surveillance capital of the world.
Oh yeah, I mean Britain's absolutely appalling. You know, we have complete and absolute 100% blanket surveillance going on in the UK. I mean, it makes me laugh when people go, oh, I'm worried about putting stuff on Facebook.
Yeah. And
I'm like,
I speak to someone who's in America on a forum the other day, and they said something like, what's going to happen next? Am I going to be filmed everywhere I go? And I thought, hang on, that's what happens to me when I go shopping, I get filmed. I get in the car and I drive on the road and get filmed.
But it's so easy to accept.
Yeah.
It's just normal.
Well, it's, I think when you can't do something there.
But it's just normal everyday life. You can accept it.
Well, it's not that, it's just that there's nothing you can do, so there's no sense in existing. There's no way you can defend yourself from it.
They can't protest reason about this new law that you can't photograph policemen, have you seen that? Well, brought in as part of the anti-terror laws that now no public citizen is allowed to photograph the police just walking down the street or anything. They're not allowed to photograph the police to get the camera taken.
Very handy for them.
And they had a big demonstration in London and they were passing the thing with lots of hundreds of people lost their photographing the police.
People's heads in, and you've got to run under any circumstances. The thing is, if you go on a march nowadays, you've got the police will be there and have specific people.
Yeah,
biometric
recognition
is really, you can isolate a person at the airport and just don't immediately check.
Yeah,
they've been doing that since the 80s as well.
Yeah.
They used to have actual spotters, they call video demonstrations, and they'd have spotters on. I know, we're doing it in general for a long time, you know, it's just they're doing it more sophisticated. Because I knew, even in the 80s, I knew people who were arrested for something they did on a demonstration at the next demonstration.
Well, here it's like, you're arrested in Norway.
Well, you probably are in the UK now. But at the time, they would pick you up with spotters at the next demonstration.
And do you think, I mean, if I told such results to participants who believe in key signing, they'd probably be offended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the education aspect is something I wrote down that I didn't know how to bring it up. Yeah, it's a good question. You should definitely put it together in academic form, and then you should try and disseminate it in less academic form.
Yeah, but I'm still thinking about how to first raise awareness to the general problem of what is othering or how does discrimination work, and then and what I observed in your circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
do
you have time to start the other resource? Because there's a lot of work around women and free software being done, but there's very little of it is ethnographical or theoretical in any way. Most of it is trying to be polite to women. So it would be quite nice if we could pull together some of the more observational and more into a
got
a wiki coming on.
Yeah.
A really good way to deal with young people or people who are not receptive to a message is to put it in comic book form.
Yeah, that's true.
You write a story about somebody who goes to a key signing party and they experience this stuff, and it's less threatening, maybe. And you know, it's a lot of work and it's got to be done nice. But as nice as, you know, attractive.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to get a message, like for drugs and stuff like that, they usually work.
Yeah.
So maybe you can you shouldn't really care about it that much.
I started to do this because of things that disturbed me, and I thought, how can I change this? Okay, first I have to get to know it more in a more detailed way.
You tell a story about these things that happen and how they make the person feel and all that sort of stuff. It makes it less threatening, maybe, than telling them, because it's a narrative.
Yeah.
That really works as well. I know a few projects we've done about them doing this standard documentation. They've done actually like a graphic novel or something, yeah. And released it under Creative Commons. It was a hardware project about using old hardware with free software and stuff. And then that was how they did their book that they would give out to people, and they could print them, and they could redistribute them. And it was a story about how a woman in her 60s or something came to build a computer for herself, having never used one before. And that was how they did the documentation. And people seemed to
know the name of the project.
It's the one in Sheffield, Open Access Space Sheffield.
Oh.
James.
I found
the name of it, but it's just a little comic that they did, graphic novel, which is really good.
I think the format of that is fun. I mean, it's a big difference between being in a social space and someone saying you are behaving in a discriminatory fashion because you want to die. But if I read it in private on a wiki, that's okay. I have an emotional space where I can cope. You know, so mm-hmm. I think there are differences in the ways that you can work online.
But also, the comic book is a great idea because then the people have vicariously the experience of being the other, and they place themselves, their perspective, with the other.
So I'm going to have to go because I'm supposed to be chairing the session next week.